Chapter 1. The wider he smiled and called us friend, the tighter we clung to our purses. Argon Sleiter, The Wastrel's Stratagem, Act 4, Scene 1. I've had more than my fair share of unpleasant surprises over the course of a century or so of fighting the Emperor's enemies, whenever running away and hiding from them wasn't an option. But the sudden appearance of Thomas Beige in the corridors of the Emperor's beneficence is one I still can't recall without flinching. Not because the situation was particularly life-threatening, which I suppose made it unusual enough given the kind of surprises I usually got, but because of the associations the memory of it still triggers. A curious amalgam of anger at his subsequent pig-headed stupidity, which almost ended up handing an imperial world to the ruinous powers neatly gift-wrapped with a pretty pink bow, and more importantly, could have resulted in my ignominious execution had events not turned out as they did. And the flood of unpleasant memories his presence stirred up in me at the time. I hadn't liked him when we were commissar cadets together at the Schola Progenium. And I suppose I would have disliked him still if I'd spared him so much as a single thought in the years since we were judged fit to inflict ourselves on a regiment somewhere and sent off elsewhere in the galaxy. Or in my case, I strongly suspect, handed a scarlet sash and politely shown the door because it seemed the easiest way of keeping my tutors from resigning en masse.
In point of fact, Kane's record as a Schola student is best described as unremarkable. His academic results are, by and large, on the low end of average. The only areas in which he did better than this being sports and combat techniques. His disciplinary records are surprisingly free of infractions, which, given his character, probably means the one thing he truly excelled at, even in those days, was not getting caught.
Caiaphas? He nodded a greeting, as though we'd always been on good terms, and a smile as sincere as an ecclesiarch distributing alms in front of the picked casters smeared itself across his pudgy features. I heard you were on board. That didn't surprise me. By that point in my career, my reputation preceded me wherever I went, smoothing the way in a fashion which often made my life a great deal easier, and, as if to balance things out in some way, periodically dragging me into life-threatening situations of bowel-clenching terror. No doubt by now, 3 days out from Castafor, the entire ship would be aware that Kane, the hero of the Imperium, was on board, and either pretending not to be impressed by that sort of thing, or trying to find some way of scraping an acquaintance in order to further their own careers by coattailing on mine. Well, good luck to anyone daft enough to try the latter, I thought.
Castafor. An imperial world recently cleansed by an orc incursion. For once, Kane and the 597th had been out of the thick of the fighting, seeing relatively little action, and his brief anecdotes about the exceptions needn't concern us at this juncture.
Beige, I returned the nod curtly, irked by his use of my given name. We'd never been friends at the Schola, and I resented the presumption now. Come to think of it, I don't recall that he'd ever had any friends, just a small group of cronies as pious and self-righteous as he was, always whining on about the grace of the Emperor or running to the proctors with tales of the minor infractions of other students. The only time anyone was ever pleased to see him was on the scrumball pitch, where he got tackled enthusiastically at every opportunity, whether he had the ball or not. I had no idea you were part of this little jaunt. The smile curdled a little as he registered the snub, but he was bright enough to realize that making an issue of it in public wouldn't be a good idea. The corridors were filling with senior guard officers, the black coats and scarlet sashes of a handful of other commissars among them, all drifting towards one of the recreation halls where the Lord General himself was expected to brief us in a few minutes' time. Not in person, of course, as he'd be travelling in some style aboard the flotilla's flagship, but the tech priests had apparently rigged up some method for him to picked cast all the vessels in the task force simultaneously before we made the transition to the warp.
"I'd hardly describe facing the enemies of humanity as a jaunt," he said stiffly. "It's our holy duty to preserve the Emperor's blessed domains for the merest taint of the unclean."
"Of course it is," I replied, just as unable to resist teasing the pious little prig now as I had been nearly 30 years before. "But I'm sure he wouldn't mind if we had a bit of fun while we were doing it." Of course, facing whatever horrors might be waiting for us wherever we were going was about as far from my idea of fun as it was possible to get. But it was the sort of thing a hero was supposed to say, and it went down well with the crowd around us, most of whom were trying very hard to look as if they weren't listening to the conversation. "I'm sorry to interrupt your socializing, Commissar." Colonel Castine cleared her throat and glanced at her chronograph with studied nonchalance. "But I believe it would be impolite to keep the Lord General waiting." "Thank you, Colonel," I responded, grateful for the intervention and conveying that fact with a glance no one else present other than Major Brocklaw, her second-in-command, would have been able to pick up on. Our years of service together had given us a rapport which came as close to friendship as our respective positions allowed, and which helped no end in the smooth running of the regiment.
By this point, roughly 5 years after the adventures on Simia Orichalcae presented in the previous volume, Kane was almost a third of the way through his period of service with the 597th. His activities in the interim are recorded elsewhere in the archive, but are irrelevant to the present account.
"This is your colonel?" Beige asked with undisguised incredulity. Castine's jaw knotted with the effort of reining in her instinctive response, which from long experience I expected to be short, pithy, and anatomically improbable. Happy to return the favour she'd just done for me, I nodded. "She is indeed," I said, "and a damn good one too." Then I laughed and patted Beige on the back, which I remembered from our days at the Scola was something he'd always detested. "Surely you haven't forgotten how to read rank insignia."
"I hadn't noticed them," he muttered, his face slowly crimsoning.
Well, maybe that was true. Castine had quite a spectacular figure, in a trim, well-muscled sort of way, and perhaps he hadn't bothered to look that high.
She was standing behind you.
"Quite," I said, unable to resist prolonging his discomfiture a little longer by making introductions. "Colonel, may I present Commissar Thomas Beige, an old classmate of mine." Castine nodded a formal greeting, which Beige echoed a little over-eagerly, trying to make up for his lapse in good manners. "Beige, this is Colonel Regina Castine, commanding officer of the 597th Valhalla, and Major Rupert Brocklaw, her executive officer. Commissar?" Brocklaw stuck out a hand for Beige to shake, which he did after a moment's hesitation, wincing as the Major closed his grip. He tried the same thing on me the first time we'd met, and I'd been grateful for the augmetic fingers on my right hand. "Any friend of Commissar Kane is always welcome in our quarters."
"Thank you."
Beige retrieved his hand, although whether he was astute enough to realize Brocklaw's tone effectively ruled him out of that general invitation was unlikely. Trapped by social convention, he flapped it vaguely at the two men flanking him.
"Colonel Asmar of the Talam 229th and Major Scipio, his second in command."
I glanced back at Castine and Brocklaw, amused at the contrast between the two groups. While the Talans were both short and dark-complexioned, swathed in the loose tunics of their desert homeworld, the Valhallans were about as physically different as it was possible to be. Castine was wearing her red hair drawn back in a ponytail, blue eyes as clear as the skies above the ice fields of her homeworld, while Brocklaw's flint-grey gaze perfectly mirrored the night-dark hair which framed it. In deference to what they considered to be the stifling heat outside the areas assigned to us, which, as usual, they'd had refrigerated to temperatures which left the breath smoking, they were dressed in simple fatigues, only the rank pins on their collars denoting their status. So to be fair, I suppose Beige could have been forgiven for not realizing who they were at first, but that wasn't going to stop me enjoying his embarrassment. "A pleasure," I nodded to the two officers. "You have a formidable reputation as warriors. I look forward to hearing the glorious victories of the Talan people."
"We prevail by the grace of the Emperor," Asmar said,
his voice surprisingly mellifluous. Beige nodded a little too eagerly.
"Yes, absolutely. Faith is the strongest weapon in our arsenal, after all."
"Maybe so," I said, "but I'll still take a las pistol to back it up." It wasn't the wittiest remark in the galaxy, I'll admit that, but I was expecting at least a smile. Instead, to my surprise, the Talon's expressions hardened imperceptibly.
"That would be your choice,
of course." Asmar bowed formally once, and turned away, followed by his number two. Beige hesitated a moment, as if debating whether to go with them straight away, but just couldn't resist getting the last word in.
"I'm afraid not everyone shares my appreciation of your sense of humour," he said. "Our Talon friends take their faith very seriously."
"Well, good for them," I said, beginning to understand why no one had shot him by accident yet. By luck or somebody's good judgment, he'd been assigned to a regiment of Emperor botherers as humourless as he was. Of course, at that point, I didn't know the half of it. They had chaplains, like the rest of us had chimera drivers, all of the kind that make redemptionists look well-balanced by comparison.
"Kane is exaggerating a little on both counts. Talon regiments do tend to have an inordinate number of chaplains compared to most others, often attached as low down the command structure as individual squads, but few of them are quite as fanatical as the members of the Redemptionist cult. It cannot be denied, though, that their entire culture is remarkably pious, and few natives of that world are prepared to take any significant decision without consulting a cleric for guidance as to the will of the Emperor in the matter."
Had I realized the consequences that were to flow from the impulse to irritate Beige and unwittingly offending his friends in the process, I suppose I'd have held my tongue. But at the time, I remained in blissful ignorance and went into the briefing feeling rather pleased with myself. Because of the delay in the corridor, Castine, Brocklaw and I were among the last to arrive. But once again, my reputation worked to our advantage, and a trio of seats had somehow been kept clear for us, despite there being not quite enough to go round. Beige and his Talons, I noticed in passing, were among those squeezed in at the back, standing uncomfortably and gazing resentfully at us as we made our way down to the front of the auditorium. There were 5 regiments in all aboard the Emperor's Beneficence, an antediluvian galaxy-class troopship which seemed to be kept functioning entirely by the constant activity of her tech priests and engine seers, and the senior command staff of all of them came to a tidy total. Most had sent their entire complement to save the effort of repeating the exercise later on, and I was able to spot all of our own company commanders and their immediate subordinates scattered among the crowd before I sat down. Apart from us and the Talons, the ship was carrying a Valhallan armoured regiment, whose Leman Ruses I had been delighted to see stowed in the hold next to ours, and who in turn seemed equally pleased to have found themselves travelling with another unit from their home world, and a couple of infantry regiments newly raised on Castafor. The officers from there were easy to spot, thanks to the newness of their uniforms and the expressions of alert interest they directed at everything which caught their attention, most of which seemed to be the women from the 597th. The Cogboys had been busy. There was no doubt about that.
Cogboys, a slang term for tech priests, common among the Imperial Guard, apparently derived from the cogwheel insignia of their calling.
Wires and cables snaked across the floor of the chamber, being tended to by white-robed acolytes, chanting the appropriate rituals of activation, terminating in what I recognised as a hololithic display unit of remarkable size and complexity. At the moment, it was projecting a rotating image of the Imperial Eagle, which hazed and sputtered in the familiar fashion of all such devices, accompanied by jaunty music of staggering vacuity. "Did anyone remember the Carbonuts?" I asked, reminded of a public holotheatre, and a few of the nearby officers chuckled sycophantically. After a moment, the hum of conversation died away as the lights dimmed. The senior tech priest ceremoniously kicked his control lectern, and the familiar face of Lord General Zyvan replaced the Aquila, looming down at us like an out-of-focus balloon. After a moment of heated discussion among the tech priests, somebody yanked a couple of wires out of their sockets, and the music stopped abruptly, enabling us to hear him. "Thank you all for your kind attention," the balloon said, its voice sizzling with static. It had been some time since I'd spoken to the Lord General in person, our paths having crossed rarely since our first meeting on Gravelax about 6 years before, and most of those occasions had been fraught, to say the least, occurring as they did in the middle of either a war zone or a diplomatic crisis. Nevertheless, we'd always got on tolerably well, and I respected his concern for the welfare of the men under his command, which, since they included me, I thought was a decided asset in a military leader. "No doubt you've been wondering why we've mobilised in such a hurry following the success of our campaign against the Orcs on Castafor." A few of the officers from there raised a cheer, which trailed off into embarrassed silence. "Here it comes," I murmured to Castine, who nodded grimly.
Normally, we would have expected to remain on the newly cleansed world for some months at least, helping to rebuild the bits the greenskins had put a dent in, making sure the local PDF was back up to strength, and generally enjoying a bit of a breather before moving on to the next war. But instead, we'd been hurried aboard the Emperor's Beneficence almost as soon as we'd reached our staging area, the first shuttles already waiting to ferry our vehicles up to orbit as we'd arrived. One of our new Castaforian regiments had already proceeded to Starside. Fortunately, they were too green to have staked out the most comfortable quarters and accessible mess halls for themselves, and were easily displaced by the veterans of the 597th. So our troopers were as happy with the situation as it was possible to be, which wasn't much. A mobilization that rapid had to mean trouble had blown up without warning in a relatively close system, and we were being sent to deal with it. That meant we'd be going in hot, with little idea of what we'd be facing, and already caught on the back foot. Not a situation any warrior likes to be in. Zyvan wasn't too happy about things either. I could tell, although I suppose being personally acquainted with him gave me an advantage in that regard. He was hiding it well, though, his usual air of bluff competence barely impeded by the distortions of the hololith. Certainly most of the people around me were buying it. 10 days ago, we received an astropathic message from a naval task force hunting a flotilla of Chaos Raiders on the outer fringes of the subsector. As I'd expected, Zyvan's face disappeared to be replaced by a map of the local star group. Castafor was off to the bottom left, almost at the edge of the display, and a small cluster of contact icons overlapped it, marking the positions of our fleet. I drew in a deep breath. If I'd read the runes correctly, we were the only troopship on the move, accompanied by a handful of the warships. The rest were still sitting in orbit, twiddling their thumbs, no doubt feeling mightily relieved that for one reason or another they weren't quite ready to go. That meant we were the spearhead, first into whatever might be waiting for us, which in turn meant we were likely to soak up the bulk of the casualties. My stomach tightened at the thought. I didn't have long to digest the implications, though, as the display lurched suddenly, skipping a couple of parsecs to the right and dumping Castafor ignominiously into the void outside the projection field. A couple of tech priests started arguing in urgent undertones, and one of them disappeared under the lectern, his mechadendrites twitching. "They've been tentatively identified as a group calling themselves the Ravagers." Zyvan's voice continued, blissfully unaware that the starfield in the hololith was now bouncing like a joy girl on overtime. The image steadied itself as a shower of sparks interrupted from the control lectern, and the tech priest emerged from beneath it, looking slightly singed. After a final wobble, it zoomed in on a cluster of contact icons bearing the runes of Chaos Forces. The hairs on the back of my neck prickled at the sight. Emperor knows I've faced a lot over the years, but the thought of the great enemy still disturbs me more than most. Perhaps it's because I've seen so much of what they can do, but I think it's their sheer unpredictability which makes them so worrying. Most enemies are rational, at least in their own terms. Tyranids want to absorb your genetic material, orcs want to kill you messily and loot your corpse, and Necrons just want to kill every living thing in the galaxy.
Actually, just the sentient ones. So far as we know.
But chaos is random, by its very nature, and even if you can work out what it is the enemy's after, half the time only the Emperor knows why they want it in the first place. They've been hitting isolated systems and merchant convoys sporadically for the last few years, Zyvan went on, while a red line considerately tracked the path of their depredations. Typical chaos tactics, hit and run mostly, inflicting the maximum number of casualties, then withdrawing before the fleet arrives to give them what for. Sounds like a cornate cult, I whispered to Castine and Brocklaw, who looked a little puzzled, before remembering that they hadn't encountered any minions of the ruinous powers yet, and I was probably the only one in the room with much idea of the divisions within the ranks of the great enemy. That was some degree of comfort, anyway. In my experience, they were the easiest type of renegade to deal with, having little ambition beyond getting into combat as quickly as possible and killing as many of our people as they could before being cut down themselves. That made them particularly susceptible to ambushes and flanking attacks, which would work to our advantage, particularly if we could stick the Castaforians out in front as bait. The Navy finally caught up with them on the fringes of the Salamine system, inflicting severe losses on their fleet, Zyvan continued. I wasn't surprised. Recognizing the blue icon of a Tau colony world, where the Ravagers were sure to have met far stronger resistance than they expected. That would have given the fleet time to catch up and join in slaughtering the heretics in the name of the greater good. The Tau would have loved that, I was certain, until it dawned on them that they now had an Imperial fleet squatting on their doorstep instead, and the heretics had already weakened their defences. Several vessels did manage to flee into the warp. The exact number and type remained to be determined. "Which affects us how exactly?" Brocklaw murmured, with the ground pounder's typical disdain for anything the Navy might be doing. A guardsman to the core, his only interest in starships was how quickly and comfortably they could move the regiment to the next planet we were supposed to kick nine shades of hell out of to maintain peace and stability in the galaxy. As if to answer his question, Zyvan reappeared, pointing to an insignificant dot which looked to me pretty much like any other system. "Our navigators consider it highly probable that they'll end up here, in the Adumbria system, especially if their warp engines have been damaged. Apparently the warp currents are particularly strong and turbulent around Adumbria Prime, and they're likely to be drawn there." He shrugged. "Unless they're setting course for the place on purpose, which the fleet navigator thinks is quite possible given their previous heading. What they might be after on a backwater like that is anybody's guess. It could just be the next convenient target on the list." His voice hardened in the manner that I knew from experience meant he'd made up his mind about something and wouldn't be dissuaded by anything short of a direct command from the Emperor himself, or possibly a quiet word from the Inquisition. "In any case, when they arrive, they're going to be in for a surprise. If the warp currents remain favourable, we'll be there ahead of them. If we're really lucky, the rest of the task force will have had time to catch up too." I don't mind admitting it. The last sentence sent a chill down my spine. What he meant was that, barring a miracle, we'd be on our own, facing anything up to a full-scale invasion fleet with just five regiments and a handful of ships. "And if we're not?" Castine asked quietly, clearly coming to the same conclusion I had. "Then things are about to get very interesting," I said, keeping my voice steady by a preternatural effort of will. As it turned out, that was to be one of the biggest understatements of my life. Although even in my most pessimistic imaginings, I never thought we'd find ourselves embroiled in a plot so diabolical as to threaten the very fabric of the Imperium itself.